Hello, and welcome to the Learning College. My name is Alex Linder, and you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com, permanently archived. Today, we're going to dive back into The Eradicator by Mike Smith, an exciting new novel appearing in 2024. We're going to do chapter 13 and 14. They're not too awfully long, so be about 30 to 40 minutes, maybe at absolute most. Chapter 13, These Things Can Be Arranged. Mike Smith, The Eradicator. Chapter 13, These Things Can Be Arranged. I like that he gives each chapter an individual title. Helps you remember stuff you might want to cite later on. Chapter 13, These Things Can Be Arranged. And at the end of chapter 12, all of our three heroes had just met in North Dakota to close chapter 12. Chapter 13, These Things Can Be Arranged. Chad nodded at Greta, then asked Jake, "What are you doing out on the road?" "It's a long story. Can you take us to Bismarck?" "Isn't this Greta Ondrakova?" Chad asked him, pointing to her. "It is. What are you doing with her?" Greta answered for Jake, "Taking me to my mother." "Are you all right?" Chad asked her. Jake repeated, "Can you take us to Bismarck?" Chad didn't answer for a moment. "I saw a story about you online, a news story. It said you were walking on I-94 around Windsor. That was 4 days ago. I drove here from Phoenix." "A fan," Greta exclaimed. "Did you hurt her? What is she to you?" Chad asked Jake without raising his voice. "What's my sister to you?" "We're bro and sis, dude," Greta explained. Jake added, "Phoenix is far off. Do you mean you drove all that way just to help us?" Chad didn't answer. He could see that Jake was no kidnapper or bum. He didn't see any family resemblance, but something in Jake's eyes stopped him from arguing about that. An especially vicious gust of wind blew from the direction of a darkened cloud bank. "Jake, I feel like sitting down," Greta said, already sinking to the ground. Chad and Jake helped her up. Chad saw that the two were in bad shape. He had to get them to shelter. He nodded in the direction of his car, and they followed him across the road without objection and got in the back. "We're going to Bismarck," Jake said. Chad started the engine. "I'm taking you to a hotel." "I can't pay you. Not soon, anyway. Take care of your sister." Chad drove west to Steele, about 10 miles. He parked in the Brick Road Inn and Suites lot. Three got out as the snow, which had started falling during their short ride, turned into a gauzy curtain. Under the entrance roof, Chad stopped them. "Get two rooms," he said, and thrust some cash into Greta's hand. Jake said to him, "Thanks for wanting to make sure we recover, but cash alone probably won't get us rooms." "We don't have ID," Greta explained to Chad. "Why don't you go in and get them? Wait, I bet you don't have ID either." Chad nodded affirmatively. Greta smirked. "Did you not say that you saw us in a news story online?" Chad nodded again. "Go get your laptop and I'll use the story." Chad retrieved the laptop from the back of his car. He turned it on and showed her his offline copy of the story. "Don't worry, I'll give it back," she said and took the laptop. "Greta, are you sure you know what you're doing?" Jake asked. She nodded, and while Chad waited outside, she entered the lobby with Jake. The two approached the front desk, and Greta told the male clerk that she wanted two suites for the night, one with a king-sized bed, one with two double beds. The clerk had close-set eyes and seemed to recognize her without remembering who she was. Knew he'd seen her face before. "I'm Greta Ondrakova," she said. She put on a million-dollar smile and had the most gracious-sounding voice the clerk had ever heard. She showed him the story on Chad's laptop. "I'm making a television special. It's called Greta Ondrakova's America. It will premiere in March on the Zed Channel." "Oh, you're that actress." "I try to be," she laughed. "Does it not get lonely out here?" The clerk shrugged. "Do you like your job?" He shrugged again. "Maybe we can use you for an interview." So saying, she put the cash on the counter. "The king size is for me, but the double bed is for my two bodyguards. The other bodyguard is on the way. I'll need a credit card and a driver's license." "I understand completely. I don't carry any. You see, I'm supposed to be a homeless hitchhiker, discovering if people are good or not." The clerk didn't want to lose his job, and he looked it. "Wait, if you're making a TV show, where is your crew?" "Bunking in the road bus just outside of Bismarck. They do interviews after I leave." Well, Greta added with no trace of aggressiveness in her voice, only people who don't hate will be interviewed. The clerk was handing her the keys when Chad came in. There you are, Jake said to him. We thought we lost you. Chad played along and joined them. Their suites faced each other across an interior hallway. Thank you, Greta said to Chad as the three stood outside their doors. Jake seconded her thanks by nodding curtly. Greta went on, what's your name again? Who are you? Chad didn't answer. He only said, you're tired, ma'am. We can all talk in the morning. He went inside the suite that had the king-sized bed. Once Greta and Jake were inside the other suite, she cried out, I'm taking my shower first before I fall down. What kind of breakfast do you think we can get in this dump? She had nightmares, though, and woke up in her bed crying more than once. Jake mostly slept through that noise, but at one point he asked her, what's wrong? My mother, my mother. He felt dread when he heard her say that, but he didn't know why and immediately succumbed again to sleeping anyway. In the morning, reflected light from the snowbank in the parking lot gave a ghostly glow to the lobby's breakfast nook. Completely snowed in, the three were having biscuits and coffee at a wobbly table in the corner. Do you even have oranges or grapefruit? Greta had asked the kitchen attendant. He had replied that truck deliveries were recently suspended because of challenges, a common code word meaning supply chain failures caused by apes. She listened as Jake told Chad that he was a gene researcher who was out of a job for saying something disparaging about apes. Chad, who spoke quietly and seemed almost less belligerent than he had seemed yesterday, said he was a veteran who hated GAI. Neither of you guys have an ID. Why is that? She asked. Jake said, maybe we're both fugitives. Are you running from something? Chad asked him. Where did you get all that cash? Jake asked as we flip on to 110. Chad directed his answer to Greta because he noticed her looking at him expectantly too. Ma'am, I shot a couple of people. He did too, she replied evenly, meaning Jake. Man, she can't keep her damn mouth shut. Jake said, it's possible all of us have skeletons in our closets. Skeletons, she whispered. Chad asked Jake, why is she like this? Did you do something to her? How did you expect her to be? She's a hell of a lot better now. Greta brought her forehead to rest on the table's edge. Seeing that, Chad asked Jake sarcastically, better? I threw away her meds. Did you give her the meds in the first place? Jake put down his napkin. You saved our lives. We're grateful for that. Now you can mind your own business. We're leaving for Bismarck. Her mother is there. Greta stopped crying to say, no, she isn't there. Greta? Ms. Andrakova? Asked Chad. You pronounced it wrong, she told Chad, wiping the tears away. She looked at Jake. She's dead. The house isn't there. They sold it after they killed her. Who killed her? Jake asked. I lied to you. I'm sorry. I don't know what was wrong with me. Well, I was fucked up, she explained, but you're right. I'm getting better, I promise. Chad said, so she was poisoned. Who prescribed your pills? Jake asked her. She said, the name of the doctor should be on the bottle. Did you keep the bottle? Jake nodded, yes. It's true. It's like my brain was messed with, she went on in a low voice. I did things I normally wouldn't do, yet I wanted to do them. No one forced me to. The pills revealed a side of myself, a bad side, I guess, was always there inside of me. It's maybe like being molested. You feel that you participated, like it's your desire. You could hate yourself. Chad said, you were poisoned. He looked at Jake. Where's that bottle? What was your diagnosis? Jake asked her. Depression. It was paranoid psychosis later. Wait here. Jake signaled for Chad to follow him. Before they left her, Greta asked, you're not mad at me, are you, Slum? I mean, Jake? No, sis. We'll bring back another cup of coffee. Decaf. Jake and Chad talked in a corner of the lobby. Look, Jake said, I have to make sure of her. How? We need a tox screen on her and a chemical analysis of what she was taking. You said you threw it away. Jake shook his head. No, she lied to me, but I lied to her. We're both lying to you. We aren't brother and sister. Chad only looked at him. I met her in a homeless shelter in New York. New York? I called my lab director a monkey. Jake raised his chin and showed a scar just under his jawline. An orangutan did that. I have a new face. Use that laptop of yours to look up Jake McAllister sometime. Chad said, "You weren't joking me when you said we're fugitives." Jake waited. "Okay, I want to help her," Chad said. He added, "If you're a scientist, how come you can't analyze the pills?" "Not that kind of a scientist." "How about I use a laptop of mine to look up her mother?" "Not a bad idea, but do it later." Chad stopped him before they returned to the table. "I want us to tell her everything, always." Jake informed Greta, "We're going to get a toxicology screen on you and find out what these are." He opened his hand and showed her two of the pills. She said, "You promised me a decaf." Scene break. The name of the drug was not completely effaced. With the help of Greta's improving memory, Jake traced some letters and finally guessed a common antipsychotic. When he said its name, she said, "Yep." Chad asked Jake, "Does it drive people crazy?" "I don't know. Maybe someone spiked it." "That's what we'll determine," Jake said. After the snow melted enough, Chad drove Jake and Greta to Sal's Blood Work. This lab was located in an otherwise abandoned outdoor mall about a half mile north of the hotel. To avoid anyone's connecting them in the car, he parked a block away. Jake and Greta made the rest of the distance on foot. The two were buzzed in through the front door. Jake explained to the nurse on duty, an oldish, bored-looking man with long hair, that Greta wanted blood work done without ID. The nurse's face darkened with interest. "You don't have an appointment, though," he said slowly, as if to test them. Jake showed him $500 of Chad's money and said, "I'm sure these things can be arranged." "Out back," the nurse said. Jake and Greta left the lab and walked around the building to the alley behind it. Jake saw a security camera aimed at the back door of the lab and hesitated, but the nurse came out, so they approached him, and Jake asked quietly, "What about that?" nodding toward the camera. Now the nurse looked especially crafty. "It's disabled." "Who disabled it, you?" The nurse didn't answer. Jake gave him the five $100 bills, and after palming them, the nurse broke out a little kit and took Greta's blood. He didn't seem to realize who she was. He wiped her arm with alcohol again and said, "Come back in 2 days," and returned into the lab. The next morning, Jake and Chad drove to the apartment of a retired professor. Jake found his name online and thought that this bony fellow might have access to the university's spectrometer. Jake was gladly surprised to see that he did have access to it because it sat in an otherwise empty clothes closet in the apartment. The professor had stolen it. The university hadn't missed it because the university had closed bankrupt years ago. The professor looked broke himself and seemed glad to get the $200 which Jake gave him. He was the only person in a 300-mile radius who could operate a spectrometer, as he told Jake. He analyzed the pills and printed out the results without saying a word, then sealed the results in an envelope, which he handed to Jake. "Why don't you sell that on the black market?" Jake asked him, indicating the spectrometer. The professor said quietly, "I won't sell civilization." Jake felt a wave of sympathy. As he left the apartment, he decided not to look at the report yet. He wanted to wait until he had the blood work to compare it with. End of chapter 13. Chapter 14, The Conspiracists. The Conspiracists. Chapter 14, The Conspiracists. Jake, Greta, and Chad returned to Sal's Blood Work the next day, the agreed-on date. On the way, Greta idly looked in the glove box and found the .44 Magnum. "You aren't going to turn me in, are you?" Chad asked sarcastically. Greta shrugged. "Just keep your hands off it," Chad said. "I have to wipe it now." "Am I so dirty?" she asked him in a low voice. "I mean, wipe the fingerprints off." "Oh." Chad parked a block away, and Chad and Greta walked as before, but this time they went directly to the alley. Jake knocked on the back door. The nurse came out, closed the door behind him, and then stepped away from them. Out of the right pocket of his lab coat, he took an envelope. He raised the envelope in his fist. "These are the test results," he said. Before Jake could step forward to get the envelope, the nurse had taken a gun from the left pocket and aimed at the two. $10,000. Jake and Greta didn't move. "We don't have that kind of money," said Jake. "So you better ask your rich Hollywood friends to get it." "Yeah, I know who she is. If you don't pay, I'll give this." He turned his head to the envelope, to the media. "How do we know you haven't talked already?" Jake said. "Oh, I can keep quiet for 10 grand. For how long? The nurse chuckled. Suddenly, Greta screamed, projecting her words as if she were acting in a movie. He's got a gun! Is he going to kill us, Slum? Before Jay could react, the nurse's whole body seized up. Chad was behind the nurse, his own gun jammed in the nurse's back. Whatever's on you, Chad breathed. He was pretending to be a stick-up man. The nurse tried to run or turn around to face him, but Chad knocked him out before he could with a blow to the neck. Jake grabbed the envelope as Chad took the nurse's wallet. Then the three got out of there. Back in the car with Greta beside him and Jake in the back seat, Chad asked her, "How did you know what to do back there?" "I'm not an angel," she answered in a disdainful voice. Chad informed Jake without taking his eyes off the speeding road. "He won't connect a random holdup man with you or her, sir." Jake didn't respond. He was comparing the pill analysis and the blood work. He was lost in thought the whole time they returned to the hotel by a roundabout route. Of course, he could just keep a copy of that for himself and still sell it after they're gone. Greta asked when they got back to their suite, "Well, what's the big secret?" Jake didn't answer her. He signaled Chad to join him in the bathroom. He closed the door behind them. He explained the results to Chad. The pills weren't really the antipsychotic name on the bottle. They were sugar pills laced with what the professor had identified as psychosis-inducing chemicals. The blood work showed that these chemicals, or a trace of them, remained in Greta's system. It was true that she was poisoned. Chad's face and body contracted in pain. Then he took Jake's arm. "You're going to tell her." "No," Jake said, throwing off his hand. "You are." They came out of the bathroom, and a moment later, Chad kneeled in front of Greta, who was sitting. He looked in her eyes and told her. All Greta said in response was, "Will I be okay?" "Yes," Jake answered. "Who would poison you?" "I told you I felt better. It's because you weaned me off those pills. So you found out why I had my crazy time. As for who did it," she got up and looked out of the window, then closed the blinds. "My producer and the government, they had a conspiracy to ruin my reputation." Remember the title of the chapter, The Conspiracists. Chad asked why the government and the producer had a conspiracy to ruin my reputation. Chad asked why. "Because I didn't want to date a gorilla." Seeing Jake's skeptical frown, she explained what she had meant when she screamed in the shelter, "I won't a bride hair or a bride it. Do you bribe a bride? Do I stutter? Do I bride a bribe?" She said, "You see, bride referred to my producers wanting to ship me with an ape." Ship relationship. "Bribe meant that I never took any bribes. I can't remember ever doing that." She began her story while looking at Chad, but ended up looking at both of them, explaining with better confidence, "I'm Czech. My father died in Prague when I was 2. My mother and I moved to Bismarck. When I was 15, Nathan Elzer came to her with a proposition. He was a producer, a movie producer, and he wanted me to model. He really meant porn. She wasn't interested in that for me. She didn't like refusing, but made a deal with his brother, Wes, in California. It was take him as a producer and me as a lead in a 2-picture deal. It sounded legit, but when I went out there, I had to fight them both off, both of them. So they had a sort of revenge, they meant it to be revenge. They changed the deal to 1 picture, and it was a dog. Bad story, bad budget, bad everything. That movie was Liberation. It was a huge hit, the first real hit the industry had in years. It was the making of me. It earned, oh, I don't know how much money it made. I didn't see the box. They told me a fortune was in my bank account. My accountant was a brother-in-law of Wes and wouldn't let me touch it. I got a kind of an allowance. The 2-picture deal was back on, but I didn't want it. I'd hated making Liberation. So they decided they needed their revenge. They were very vengeful people. I saw them do things you wouldn't believe. They got publicity people to try and ship me with a gorilla. That's where the government comes in. Publicity had some liaisons on staff, FBI partners. I was told CIA, but I think it was just FBI, plus some ADL guy. I was told that dating a gorilla, getting my picture with it, attending openings and industry events with it as my boyfriend, that all of that would show my social consciousness. They told me that I needed to be considered someone in the vanguard against humanism. They talked a blue streak, but couldn't convince me to do it. I think they actually wanted me to screw the gorilla. There was even going to be a photo spread about it. I was supposed to kiss the gorilla and all this total shit. I would, a bitch, unreliable, impossible to work with. They threatened me. They threatened my mother. And finally, well, I know they killed her. The police said it was a random robbery, but they threatened to kill her before. I mean, both Nat and Wes did. And their production company had the house. They paid it off and gave it to her to live in. That was part of the second deal. They sold it after she died. I knew what they did. And they didn't hide from me that I could be next. They would kill me if I didn't agree to become an example of social consciousness. I couldn't go to the police. It wouldn't do any good. They had everything fixed, they and Ron. I wasn't scared of them. I was not intimidated. But I couldn't do anything after the funeral. I was a mess. That's when I was given the pills, to help me work, so they said. But I wanted out, period. That's when I had my crazy time. I started doing things, like the accidents. You know that I'm the tabloid's car accident queen, and they got that from the publicity people. They photographed me dancing naked in nightclubs. I honestly don't remember it. I don't remember a lot. I never did date an ape, so of course it was hateful humanist for a while, and finally it was dumb druggy. That was the revenge. And I guess it was a threat to other actors, too, to make them fall in line. Do what we say, or else. I knew it wasn't normal to pop pills all the time because I was warned about that before I went out to California, but these pills were supposed to help me with my grief. That's what everyone said, the doctors, the insurance people, even Barry, my personal assistant. B-A-R-I. Chad said quietly, I wish I'd been there. She didn't react to that. Jake couldn't help recalling what Baker said in the shelter about the poisoners. He walked into the bathroom, took the rest of the pills out of his pocket, and flushed them all. Greta said that she wanted to sleep. Chad asked if she would be okay, and she said yes. Jake and Chad went to the other suite. Jake watched the TV without paying much attention to it, and Chad scanned the net on his laptop. Chad saw a news link pop up about a hanging, and he followed the link. The story said that authorities had hanged the owner of the defunct website Monkey and Round after catching him trying to leave the country. Chad looked up the name Jake McAllister, as Jake had earlier invited him to do. The authorities' characterization of Jake as a humanist made him smile bitterly, but he became thoughtful when he read of Jake's science background. He had an idea. Hearing the TV saying something about Iran, he told Jake the full story of his service there, including how he got injured in the Zagros Mountains. He showed Jake the news story about the hanging, and this is what I come home to. That's terrible, Jake agreed, only glancing at the story. Think we should leave the country? Where to? The problem is worldwide. You helped with the Great Ape integration. I looked you up. Jake snapped. I never meant for them to do what they... You're not accusing me of anything. Maybe you could help stop it. They heard the door open and turned to see Greta coming in. Can I hang out with you guys? Chad kicked a chair at her without a word, and she sat down. You heard her story, Jake said. You have mine, and I just now heard yours. I agree. The problem's worldwide, said Chad. That means somebody's directing it. No, not necessarily. The world could be falling apart, not being taken apart. Greta listened. She knew what they were talking about and wanted to hear what else they would say. Chad pressed on. If it's directed, we need to find out who's behind GAI for real. The government, isn't it? Greta offered. Jake shook his head no. The government is factions of people. One would have to know whom specifically to stop. Chad looked at him for a long moment and then said, yes, sir. Jake wanted to tell Chad to stop calling him sir, but the word seemed to mean something to Chad, so we let it go. Remember, there's an age differential. Jake wondered if conspiracy really existed. Conspiracies do exist, he thought, if conspiracy means a group of people working for a purpose of their own. But can a given group be called a criminal conspiracy? That's the only question. Great Ape Integration is certainly a crime against humanity and the people behind it. Meanwhile, Chad was in the other room, looking at the pill bottle. Greta had watched him hunt for it. Now she saw him examining the label, holding the bottle in his good hand. She noticed that he trembled a little when he read something on the label. What is it? She asked him quietly. I recognize this name, he answered after a moment. She followed him as he returned to Jake. "Here's something. I know the doctor," Chad said. Jake glanced at the name on the label. "She's your doctor, too?" Chad shook his head. "No, FBI. "Explain." "She backed Kill 'Em All, a group I joined before I figured out what it was."
"You did?"
Jake frowned. "Are you an agent?"
"I told you who I am.
You better be telling the truth," Greta said to Chad, not harshly. Chad ignored that and went on. "That's her, and if she's poisoning actresses to hurt their reputation, then she has to be part of it."
"Of what?"
Greta asked. Chad looked at her now. "The conspiracy to destroy America." Jake corrected him on both points. "No, the criminal conspiracy to destroy the world." "Criminal conspiracy to destroy the world." Close the bottom of page 119 in chapter 14. And we'll leave it there today. I've been Alex Linder, reading to you out of Mike Smith's 2024 novel, The Eradicator. He's got a Substack, and you can find all of this permanently archived as part of our audio section at and what we styled the Learning College at vnnforum.com. So thanks for being with me today, and I'll be back with you for more from The Eradicator real soon.